Burt Show.
I don't know, maybe you've gotten in a fight with your wife or your husband and you guys freeze each other out, right?
Oh, the silent treatment.
Mm-hmm. It's the worst. So
hate that part of relationships.
So unhealthy where you're like passing each other in the hall and you're still not talking because you're so mad at each other. Or even if they're in another room, you can just feel. You can feel the coldness, right? But it lasts. I mean, it's not healthy at all. But if it lasts a day, if it lasts 2 days, right? That's a lot. What if it lasts 20 years?
Mm. Oh, my God.
Yeah, imagine that. This is one of the craziest stories I have ever heard in my life, so much so I didn't believe it was true, but it actually is true. There is a Japanese couple where the husband got into an argument one day with the wife, and it was over the fact that the wife appeared to be paying the children more attention than the husband, and his pride was hurt so much that he just decided he was going to stop communicating, all in all. He just was like, he's done. Now, normally you might be done for a day, maybe even two, but like Bert said, he was done for 20
Come
years.
On.
20 years, they did not speak. Now, in that time, they still lived together. They were raising two children together, and the wife was still trying to communicate from time to time. But the husband was so upset and his pride was so hurt that he did not say a word to her for two decades in the same home.
Now, we call this something different here in America. We call those people divorced. Like, I've heard of married people not talking for 20 years, but it's because they got the law involved.
Right.
And I heard this story, and I'm like, no way. No way this is true. There had to, like, 20 years. But when I did more digging, the fact that the son had to intervene and actually get his parents to communicate the way he did it, I was like, one... Like, we can joke about it, but that's really sad that she would stay with a man who refuses to speak to her for 20 years.
So the kids were clearly affected by this because they're growing up in this house where their parents are not saying a word to each other, so much so that one of the kids actually reached out to a Japanese talk show in order to help them and ask them help do something. Like, please, my parents are not speaking. So they convinced the parents to go on the show. And for the first time on that show in 20 years, the husband finally broke his silence and began to speak to his wife.
Come on.
And it was like this really big emotional moment. The show is super popular out there. It went viral. And it just showcased you how in Japanese society, avoiding confrontation and maintaining harmony is just really super valued. So much so that this man didn't speak for 20 years.
So when I was looking at the pictures of him walking up to her, she's sitting on this park bench. He walks up, he sits next to her, and apparently he's uttering the first words he has ever spoken in 20 years to her. The first words out of my mouth to him would be, I want a divorce.
Yeah. now that I got your attention, finally.
Yeah. Like, the audacity. Like, how dare you go 20 years with... But then again, it would be such a peaceful, quiet house.
Yeah, what if he's got money and this is just a really good setup for her? She don't have to talk to him. He doesn't have to talk to her.
This is just another reason why I think this idea of, like, living in two different places, being married, but just living in two different places has some credibility.
I agree with you.
I have another question, because technically you don't have to talk when you're doing certain things. Does that mean they were never intimate?
I don't know. Or that's a fair question.
Because you can be intimate and not speak a word.
Yeah. I doubt it, though. I can't see the wife saying, like, I'm going to give you that benefit and you're not even going to be talking to me. Like, I can't see that.
Girl, women get something out of it, too.
She might have had it. No, you know what? All right. You might be right. You might have a point.
They were talking with body language instead.
Yeah.
Was this an agreement they had made so they both weren't talking to each other, or...
No, she was against it. She wanted to talk. She was trying to talk to him the entire time. He was like, you didn't gave all the attention to the kids. You weren't worried about me. Don't worry about me now.
No.
It's insane,
yeah,
right?
They should have let that thing go a long time ago.
20 years.
Here, Burt Show.
At what point do you stop making excuses for the guy and say, hey, this just might be a red flag, but I think I'll stick it out. She wants to know if she continue to date this guy or ditch him.
Hey, Burt Show. I guess I have a bit of a ditch or date situation for you. I've always found your advice to be valuable. Are you sure you're listening to our show? So maybe you guys can help me too. I've been dating a guy for 8 months. We're in our 20s. Things have been going really well. We have a connection, as Bert likes to say.
Connection.
And we spend time with each other almost every day. Now, when Valentine's Day came around, we talked about what we wanted to do and chose a limit for how much we were going to spend on each other. I was so excited to have my first Valentine's Day with someone I love. And he knew that. Well, I bought him a gift, wrote a long message in a car about why I love him. Him? He showed up empty-handed.
Oh, my God.
No flowers, no card, No plans on what to do. It was like a regular day. He happily accepted my gift and then took me to run errands. We picked up dog food. I sat in the car while he got his hair cut. I burst into tears because I was so disappointed. And he said he didn't know how to make it up to me. I asked him if he wanted a redo, and he said yes, but he needed a month to prepare.
What?
I was hopeful for Valentine's Day 2.0, but he kept pushing it off. Well, it finally came. He showed up at my house, yelled, "Happy Valentine's Day!" And again, he was empty-handed. But I waited to see what he had planned. He drove me to some arcade an hour away that looked like a hospital inside, and then said he wanted to stop at his grandpa's house since it was just down the street. So, stupid me, of course we did. And then we went to his grandmother's grave.
What?
And then his mom called him because she needed help with something, so he dropped me off at home. Part of me thinks he only picked that arcade because it was close to his grandpa's house. It's one thing to mess up Valentine's Day, but to mess it up twice really hurts. It's not even about the holiday. It's about him knowing something is important to me and then choosing to ruin it twice. I can't help but feel like he was being so selfish and don't understand how someone who makes me feel so loved can have such a disregard for me randomly. Even to happily accept my $250 gift knowing he had nothing to give back, it's like he used Valentine's Day to get an extra birthday. I am so mad. I want to say it's just a silly holiday and it doesn't matter that much, but I feel used and I've been crying ever since. Is it a red flag? Is he just not getting it? I really need your opinions on what to do here. I am so confused and hurt. Thanks, Bert Joe.
What you got, Mo?
I was going to say at first, maybe this is something that you guys can talk about. You can just express to him how much this is important to you and how much he dropped the ball in this situation. But after it kept going and it just seems to get worse and worse and worse, I think, to be honest, this is one of those situations where when they tell you to believe people, when they show you who you are, you have to believe them. And I think this is just who he is. This is not important to him. I don't know if it ever will be. So I think this is the point of the relationship where you have to truly decide if this is something worth pursuing, because I don't see this being any better in the future.
I want to sort of piggyback on something you said in the very beginning, because I come from a family that didn't celebrate anything, nothing, right? So as I got older, I had to be taught how to celebrate. Right? How to celebrate other people. It had to be identified to me before. Now, I learned because I'm a human and realized, okay, even though I don't need this for myself, other people need to be celebrated, right? And it was a hard twitch for me too, because my entire life, I didn't know how to do it. It was never brought to me, so I never had to do it to others. I learned it. So I'll give him the initial grace on it, but at some point or another, you also can't make excuses for how you were raised. And now you're an adult and you can process and you can change.
Yeah, it's a red flag that he messed up Valentine's Day the first time, because obviously it's going to show some red flags as to like what he's not going to celebrate or what he doesn't think is important. But that shouldn't stop the relationship. To me, what the relationship red light is when you expressed why it hurt you and why it's important to you, and then you double down and then ruined Valentine's Day twice again by taking me to an arcade. That would have been grounds for me to immediately leave you. Like, I would have called an Uber from the arcade and I would have been out of there.
Yeah.
This is going to be your life from here on out. Like, if you stay with this man, I'm going to piggyback on what Mo says. When somebody shows you who they are, you know, believe them. You can justify something because, like, well, everything else is good. So, or not justify, excuse certain behavior because everything else is good. But if this is important to you, he has shown you that he is not going to prioritize you on holidays, even when you point out, hey, this hurt my feelings. I wish you did something extra, or you would do something better. And then the second time around, he did not. So either you're at a crossroads, right? Either you accept this man for who he is, and then he sucks at holidays and he sucks at giving gifts, and you have to eliminate every expectation and accept him for who he is. Or if this is something that's important to you, and which there's no right or wrong here, right? You just have to decide what's going to be best for you. If this is something that is really hurtful, and especially the fact that when you express that this is important to you and he's still neglected to make it right, then it's time to ditch.
You know what would have upset me the most in this situation? Like, I gave you a $250 gift card. Use it to buy me something.
Right.
Re-gift it.
Right. You know? So many levels here.
It's the Burt Show.
All right, Abby, since you don't have kids yet, help Kristen.
I don't like the yet that you threw in there.
Are you planning on never having kids?
Yes, that's the plan.
Okay, so yet.
What?
Yet. Right, no. You don't have kids yet.
But I don't want kids.
She says,
oh,
yeah.
It's never. You're never going to have kids. I'm sorry. No, never. All right, so since you don't have kids and don't plan on having kids, help Kristen with this parenting dilemma.
I can't wait to assist with a problem I don't want to have.
No, I am intrigued. Just pretend to step into some parenting shoes. I would love to know how you would have handled this parenting situation. So I signed my son up for T-ball, which NYO calls small ball. Jimmy plays small ball.
It's so cute. It's like their little puppies running around, their little baseball outfits and their big old hats.
And that was the issue. That's where I got in trouble. Because I know my adorable child would be even more adorable in a cute little baseball player outfit with his little jersey and his number 12 on the back and his name Jimmy and his little hat and his little white pants with his purple belt and his purple socks
and his widow sneakers.
Oh, he's so cute.
Can you just dress them up like that and put them in the backyard?
1,000%. And it would have been a lot cheaper and a lot less time consuming. So my husband was against this from the beginning, but I wore the man down and we signed up for small ball because he had two friends who are going to be on the team, right? And I'm like, that'll entice him. First practice went well. Kids seemed somewhat interested. We're good. However, Saturday, 9 a.m., we got a game. Mind you, Bart and I had an event Friday night, so we didn't go to bed till like 12:30. It was a long day, a long night. So getting up, it was a rough start to the morning. Jimmy did not want to go. He didn't want to go play baseball. So I bribed him, as any good mother would do. I bribed him to get him into his uniform, to get to the park, because I can't say we made a commitment. I made a commitment by signing this kid up for baseball, right?
Was he ever excited about the idea?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, okay. He's played in games. He's enjoyed himself. He's like the first practice. He's like, Mama, I'm a baseball player. Like he's seemingly embraced it. Apparently, this is a rite of passage, what happened Saturday morning. So there we are at Chastain at the small ball field in this teeny tiny field. It's so cute. And the Oakland A's are out there warming up and the Rockies are out there warming up.
The real Oakland A's might be playing there also. They don't have a stadium right now.
Touché.
And Jimmy refuses to go out there and warm up. Refuses.
You don't need it. A game time player.
He told me. He goes, I already know how to do that.
Practice. You're talking about practice?
Right.
But he's being very like, just, and so now it's time for the game to start. My son refuses to play. Refuses to play. Refuses to go into the dugout. Refuses to play. So then you have that parenting moral dilemma where you're like, all right, do I force my child to play? Now, reminder, he's four, literally just turned four last month. So a young four.
So he's not holding out for contractual.
No.
We got unions we need to talk to about this.
Now, mind you, on the drive over to the field, the bribery was if you go and play and you try your best and you have fun, we'll get some ice cream after the game.
That's a lot of things. He's got to have fun also.
Well, whatever. But if you go out there,
a lot of rules here.
You go out there, you know, you play, you'll get some ice cream. All right. 10:30 a.m. ice cream, dude. That's what's happening here.
That's
just
major.
To get my kid out there on the field. Yep. All right.
The equivalent, Abby, for you would be $1 million.
Yes.
For a kid to get ice cream at 10:30 in the morning.
That's a big deal.
That's $1 million for an adult.
No, the equivalent is me getting ice cream at 10:30 in the morning.
Let's not forget, as a parent, when you give your kid 10:30 a.m. ice cream, it's not just a treat for them. It's hell for you the rest of the day. Right. So that's when you whip out when you're really desperate.
Yeah, and I was really desperate. So we're sitting in the bleachers, in the stands, haven't even made it to the dugout. Kid is not budging. It is not he is not budging. And I look him dead in the eye. I go, if you don't play, like we got here, but the deal was you had to play in order to get ice cream. You don't play, you don't get any ice cream. And this kid looked me straight in the face and goes, I don't want any ice cream.
Oh, man.
He means business.
It's a showdown.
Somehow managed to get him to the dugout.
Yep.
We're in the dugout. I had to sit there with him. Tried to convince him to go bat. His little teammate Liam comes up and he's like, Jimmy, why you don't like baseball? Jimmy, why you don't want to play, Jimmy? You don't want to bat, Jimmy? Batting's so much fun, Jimmy. And he is not, he never went to bat. He never ran out into the field. Mm. He just sat on the bench with me holding his lovey the entire time. So as I'm sitting there as a parent, I'm like, do you force your kid to play or do you let your kid have autonomy in that moment and not force the issue and just suck it up and let it be a life lesson that some days be like that?
I know for sure what my dad would have done.
Me
and
too.
For sure. My dad at 4 years old would have said, okay.
At four?
At four. Oh, my dad was a terrible dad. I've told you that before. My dad would have said, okay. You don't want to play and you don't want the ice cream. That's fine.
Uh-huh.
And then after the game, he would have made me stay there in the dugout. After the game, we would have gone to get ice cream. And he would not have ordered for me.
He just ate it in front of you.
He would have just said, look, you made a decision. You said you didn't want ice cream. That doesn't mean me and your mom can't have ice cream.
Yeah,
absolutely would have done that.
We did not do that. However, we did sit in that dugout the entire time. And he asked to go. And I'm like, no, we're not going to leave. We're going to stay here and we're going to support our teammates. Yep. We're going to cheer for our teammates. We're going to support our teammates. But just so you know, you get no, like, this is, you've lost. I don't take things away. He loses them by his actions. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you lost your ice cream.
Well, I was going to say, why you got to punish yourself too? Why not just go home? Then I'd go home and I'd eat ice cream in front of him on the comfort of my own couch. That's what I was, if I'm a parent, that's what I'm doing.
And it was so sweet because the mom that had dugout duty and was like doing like the batter's lineup or whatever. And she's like, it's okay. It happens to all of us at one point in time. And I'm like, does it? Or is she just saying that to make me feel better?
No, it does. We've all gone through it, man. Ugh. We've all gone through it.
Oh, man. That's a tough one. You got to go back now?
Our last game is Saturday.
Oh, so like a 4-game season. Major League Baseball should do that.
I like this. This is great.
Our last game is Saturday. And mind you, I'm on snack duty. Bart's on dugout duty. So if we go to his final game Saturday and he refuses to play, I don't know what I'm going to do.
They immediately qualify for the playoffs as soon as they got on the field the first time.
I think he's played in like maybe 2 games.
Oh,
what a season.
Hey. The Bird Show.
So, Abby, you're a crappy friend.
Not only was I a crappy friend, but I was a terrible person, or at least that's how I felt when this all went down. I think the one big lesson I've learned about successful friendships and successful relationships is the ones that are going to stand the test of time are the ones where people can accept you making mistakes and not hold those mistakes over your head. They're able to move past it and forgive and maybe not forget, but you're able to work through those. I feel like that seems really simple, but it's not, at least in my experience. And I found out that I have a really good friend here in Atlanta, and I wanted to thank her publicly, of course, after already thanking her privately. So I'm a little nervous to tell this story because I feel like when we come on the air, we tell funny stories or we tell stories about things that are going on in our lives. And I'm like, this is a story where I really just royally screwed up. Like this is a monumental mistake. If you were going to rank friendship errors you could do in your lifetime, to me, this is a federal offense.
The only people that are allowed to comment on this online are the people that have never made a mistake in their life.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Everybody on Facebook is perfect. Yeah, like, that's what they, when you sign up, the terms and conditions are like, have you never made a mistake ever? And here's me owning up to my mistake. So feel free to flame me in the comments because I'm sure you will when this gets posted to Facebook. So this is the year that like all my friends are pregnant. I know maybe like 5 or 6 people that are having kids this year and they're all having girls. Like there is going to be a massive girl gang happening in the next couple of years because every person I know is expecting a baby girl, which is so exciting. And I can't wait to support my friends through that and watch them raise their kids. And it's going to be such an exciting, and I know this is a magical and special time for them.
So your friends are entering their mom era.
They're entering their mom era, and we love that for them. You know, this is something they've wanted for a while, and they're finally getting to experience that. So one of my friends here in Atlanta was actually the first to drop the news that she's having a kid. And so I was like, oh my God, like that was such a wake up call. I was like, oh, we're like at that age where like people are not only having kids, but they are trying to have kids.
Isn't it crazy? Like the first close friend of yours that says that, you know, that tells you and tells the crew that, you know, they're pregnant, they're having a baby. All of a sudden you're like, we're adults.
Oh no. Yeah. Cause for a while, when people tell you you're pregnant, you don't know how to react. You're like, are we happy about this news? Or are we not happy about this news? I'm just like waiting for them to respond. But so this is like the era in your life where you are giving them full on congratulations. So she ended up inviting me to her baby shower and I RSVP'd. I said, see you there, girlfriend, got the gift, threw it in my closet, put it on my Google calendar, slammed my calendar shut, and then moved on with life. And then there was a Saturday that came up and all of a sudden I was sitting on the floor of my office and doing an ask me anything on my Instagram with, you know, random people on the internet that follow me. And I'm looking through Instagram and there is a photo of her at her baby shower and I am not there. And I am like, oh my God, what did I just do? And I look at my calendar and I'm like, it's not. Why is it? It's Saturday. It said that it's not written there. Oh my God, how did I screw this up? I'm looking for the invitation. I can't find the invitation anywhere. And I'm looking through all the Saturdays and I had put it on the wrong Saturday. So I'd set it and forgot it and just completely just totally screwed up. And there I am sitting there and I felt so bad, A, because I've just now missed this monumental moment in my friend's life. But also I'm sitting there, I'm like, how narcissistic and shallow do I have to be sitting here on the floor, like talking to, like, I, you know, it's great that we have a following and a platform, but I'm sitting there like on my floor being like, ask me anything about my life. And there's my friend having one of the biggest days of her life and I'm not there.
I don't think that's narcissistic and shallow. I think you made a mistake on the calendar. That's all.
I made a mistake, but of course I'm sitting there in like this big shame spiral and also in the middle of like posting on Instagram that I'm not there. Like it's just this pile on of like, oh my God. Yeah, like, yes, I know it's a mistake, but also my experiences with friendships like haven't been good. Like there are friends I've had in the past where like not only would have this been a friendship ending offense, but it would have been like a drawn out week long war. So I'm sitting there like, oh my God, A, I'm going to lose this friend. B, I feel bad about the offense I've committed against this friend. Like she didn't deserve for me to not be there. And also for me to look horrible and just post all the on the internet about all these things about me. I felt like a narcissist. I'm not saying it was a narcissistic thing to do, but I'm like, I felt like so self-centered in that moment.
You're just like, of all the things I could be doing right now, instead of being at her baby shower, yes. I'm sitting here doing something very self-serving and it made you feel that way, which I understand. And again, Bert's right. Like you made a mistake and that was very, like it was unfortunate timing that you saw that on Instagram while you were doing that. But that does not in turn make you a narcissist.
I should have been saving dying children to not have been at her baby shower. Like that's the only thing that would have made up for it.
You talked to her about it though.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of let the day go because I'm like, I don't want to text her in the middle of it. Like, yeah. I don't want to now make this really special day about like my mistake. So I text her. I literally woke up at the butt crack of dawn. I'm like, I can't wait to text her and tell her how sorry I am. So I text her like right on the dot at like 9 a.m. I'm like, that's a reasonable time. I'm sitting in the car with the gift in the passenger seat. I'm like, whenever you're ready, I'm coming over. And she finally texts me a couple hours later and I run over and, you know, she was fine about it. But I had forgot that I had hid her from my Instagram story because I was so embarrassed. I was like, I don't want her to see this. And somehow she noticed and she texted me last week and she's like, I just want to make sure we're good. I'm like, no, I just want to make sure that we're good. And she showed me so much grace and it just really showed me that this is a friend that I can really count on. And I just truly appreciated her showing me so much grace for, to me, what was a huge, huge offense against her.
It's really awesome that she did show you that grace. I wonder if one of the lessons here is you should show yourself as much grace as your friend did. Because I'm not really sure when it started to happen for me, and I still struggle with it a little bit. But beating myself up so badly for mistakes, man, not just that day, maybe a week or just trying to be perfect. And when I wasn't, you know, it feeds into the, oh, I need to be liked by everybody, which of course is making you even internally fight with yourself a little bit more. Just learning to apologize to yourself and then moving on. I'm not sure when that happened for me, but I'm way better at it now. I think maybe it's time for you to start looking into it.
Well, I mean, I think it's easy to have grace for you when you haven't made mistakes. It's like, oh, I can, but you know, you kind of look at every offense you've ever done in your friendship in the past, and you start to, not just that specific friendship, but you look at all your other friendships and you're like, oh my God, do I have a track record of being a bad friend? Am I, you know, is that why this relationship ended? Is that why that friendship ended? And, you know, you start to just take all the inventory of everything you've ever done. And it's not really just about you missing that one baby shower, but it's like, am I not a good person? Like, that's how you start to feel in that moment.
I know it's a lot different for men and women, but I know for me, at some point in my life, like my friendships, especially my close circle, it got to a point where like the intent was all that really mattered for me. Like I have friends who I know they have good intentions. I know that they would never intentionally hurt me. So it's like they make mistakes. We all make mistakes. You're human and we all have lives as adults. You forget things. You can't always show up. But I think like, you get to a point where you just understand your certain friends and you just know who they are. And they would have to do a lot for me to feel like I'm cutting them off, because we're just beyond that.
Now, if you didn't feel bad about it, that would be a different issue.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that, like, yeah, you of course, you're going to feel bad. Well, not of course, because there are some people who wouldn't have felt bad. But it's very obvious that this was a honest mistake. You feel really, really bad about that. So I feel like there is, like, this balance here. Should you feel bad? Yeah, you missed a big day for your friend. You wanted to be there, so you're going to feel bad for her. You're feeling bad for yourself as well. And that makes total sense. Like, you're 1,000% validated. But if you're going to beat yourself up for weeks over this, you need to make a therapy appointment.
Kristen, I can't afford therapy.
She's got ChatGPT.
ChatGPT.
You got to pay for that now,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, she does. She's using it so much, ChatGPT, saying, no more advice until you give me some coin. Yeah. So I'm going to extend this a little bit, because I'm wondering if these two sort of go hand in hand. And it's something I've been wanting to talk about for weeks and put it on the schedule and always end up pushing it off. I want to talk about women and apologizing. And I wonder if this also has to do with apologizing to yourself and moving on. So maybe I'm just more present to it lately, but the amount of times I see women apologizing for things they have absolutely no reason to apologize for, maybe I'm just more in tune with it now, but I see it constantly. And I save three examples that women apologize to me for no reason at all. Example number one. It was a couple of weeks ago when I was down in Costa Rica on my kids' senior trip, right? So we're staying at Planet Hollywood down there, and there is a sidewalk that goes from the pool area down to the beach. Plenty of room for two people on both sides. I'm walking my way down to the beach. A woman is walking her way up on the same sidewalk. So we're going face to face. Plenty of room on both. She skips off of the sidewalk and goes into the sand and dirt, and then apologizes to me as she passes me. And I'm like, for what? We're both using the sidewalk. There is plenty of room. Why are you apologizing? And why are you walking in the sand now while I am walking on the sidewalk?
Some women feel the need to apologize for taking up space. It's really sad.
That's why Katy Perry and Gayle King went to space.
Well, they took up too much.
Yeah. We're trying to show everyone that it's okay to take up space.
All right, let me give you the other examples also, and then you guys break off into a woman's round table and tell me, and I'm just going to listen.
Oh, yeah, no, we've talked about this, and I will gladly talk about it again.
All right, second one. I am getting off of a flight, and I'm in, let's just say, I'm in row 13. Woman is in row 14, right? She is approaching the aisle, and I'm approaching the aisle at the same time. I get out, I get my bag, she's behind me, she gets her bag, and she apologizes to me. She wasn't in my space, she didn't interfere at all for me getting off the plane, was behind me, and says, oh, I'm sorry, no reason at all. Last example, just happened this weekend. We are in Alpharetta, downtown Alpharetta, and I was taking Asa to the bathroom. We go into the guy's room, which is 6 feet from, actually, they were bathrooms for both men and women. So you could have gone into either one. One was occupied, so I went to the one that was further down the hall. 6 feet, 7 feet, right? As I am walking out of my bathroom with Asa, A woman is walking out of her bathroom at the same time. Not anywhere near in my way. We don't have to go around her or anything. But as she opens up the door and closes it, she looks back and apologizes to me and Asa. No reason at all. Wasn't in our way. We weren't even close to each other. And I can't for the life of me figure out why this, where this is coming from. I think because I'm a guy.
Well, no, this has been an epidemic for centuries. I mean, women have, I mean, if you are in any kind of woman algorithm or feminist algorithm, like over apologizing has been an issue for women for a long time. My best friend, I get on her about this all the time because she unnecessarily apologizes for everything. And I'm like, stop saying I'm sorry. There's nothing for you to be sorry about. And listen, this is not a black and white thing. This is a gray thing. This is very nuanced. There's a lot of layers here as to why women feel the need to constantly apologize. And it, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with like your personal history and your personal life experiences as to why you feel the need to apologize. Cause you know, I love getting to the bottom of the answer why. I do feel like for the longest time, women have been trained to be amicable and make peace and make sure everybody is happy and you don't want to ruffle any feathers and you don't want to rock the boat. And so sometimes you feel by, you know, a way to do that is by apologizing. You've been made to feel somewhere in your life that you shouldn't take up space. So anytime you do, you apologize.
What exactly does that mean? Take up space? So, just any kind of physical space whatsoever? You're not supposed to be there?
Yeah, here's a great example some women do. They'll walk down a sidewalk and they won't get out of the way for usually men. And not, I'm not trying to be a man hater. Men will bump into them. They won't think to move out of the way. The women have been conditioned to move out of the way. And so when you don't, like if a woman's coming out of the bathroom and she realizes she may have been in the path of you and Asa and what you are doing, it's automatic response. I'm sorry. Don't want to rock the boat because women get lashed out at by coworkers, colleagues, bosses if they don't approach with trepidation. If you go in there gangbusters like, hey, you owed me this 3 days ago. Where is it? You get snapped at. But if you're like, hey, I'm so sorry just to bother you again, like this is what women in corporate worlds are finding, then it's received as, okay, it's not some woman telling me what to do like I owe them. It's coming from a place of humility and humbleness. And so it's a self-preservation thing, honestly.
Deep down, I think it's a survival instinct. And I'm going to try and regurgitate things I've listened to in a podcast from this guy who studied like genetics at Oxford. And he talked about how women, so much of the like the tribal survival like instincts that we have are so much to do with reputation and how a lot of like apologizing or trying keeping the peace has to do with the fact that like if you didn't have a good reputation as a woman, like you would have been excommunicated, you would have been ousted, like women wouldn't have talked to you, men wouldn't want anything to do with you. So when women feel the need to like placate and over apologize, like deep down it comes from those instincts of like I need to be accepted within the tribe, otherwise like I won't have resources or, you know, all the other stuff you need to be able to get through life.
I also think for some, and this is not for all, because again, this is not black and white. This is very gray. And I think it's a case by case basis as to why a woman is apologizing. But for some, it might be a level of fear. Like you never know how a man might react or if you have been subjected to that in the past. So in order to make sure that you're not angering anybody, you're going to go ahead and apologize and make sure that everybody is, you know, I'll take ownership of whatever I think, you know, may potentially upset him. So if I go ahead and preemptively apologize, then there won't be any kind of lashing out or escalation of anything.
Well, I'm Ace's size, so that's not the case for me.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and I was,
what's that?
You got big muscles?
And I was a chronic apologizer for a really, really long time. And sometimes I catch myself doing it. I'm now making sure that when I show emotion and I cry, I try not to say sorry anymore because there's nothing wrong with having feelings and showing emotion and crying. Because a lot, you'll notice this now when somebody cries, they'll be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry because they got upset. And especially when it has to do with grief. And I'm like, you never should feel obligated to apologize because, you know, you're showing emotion. And I, like Cassie says, in the workplace, you know, send an email, oh, I'm so sorry to be a pain, but if I could really get that XYZ by the end of the day, It's something women have been and continue to deal with.
Well, a lot of times in the workplace, you, Kristen, do have reason to apologize.
Yeah, I know. Just by being
less. Just by taking up space. All right. Yeah, it's. I've just noticed it more and more and more lately, and maybe it's just because I'm more present to it now, but I guess it's been happening since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Books have been written about it. I know it.
Mm-hmm.
Show. Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's the Burt Show's entertainment buzz.
You know when you're hanging out with one of your friends and they just randomly drop some unbelievable lore about their life? That's kind of what Lana Del Rey did while she was performing at this weekend's Stagecoach Festival. So if you've never heard of Stagecoach, it's basically like Coachella, but it leans a little bit more country. And Lana Del Rey was performing a new song that she hasn't released yet called 57.5, and it's basically just a reference to her millions of Spotify listeners. So she has 57.5 million Spotify listeners, and that's why the song title is that. But in this track, she drops some shocking information about her romantic past that I don't think anybody saw coming. Now, I'll tell you what she says. I'll tell you the lyrics before I play it, because then you'll be able to hear the lyrics more once you know what she's saying, because it's a little bit hard to hear. She says, "This is the last time I'm ever going to sing this line." So whatever this line is, it's not going in the final copy of the song that she's going to release. "This is the last time I'm ever going to sing this line. I kissed Morgan Wallen. I guess kissing me kind of went to his head. If you want my secret to success, I suggest don't go ATVing with him when you're out west."
If you want my secret to success, I suggest don't go ATVing with him when you're out west.
Sounds like a Morgan Wallen type of thing to do.
It does.
He's got a reputation.
It is funny because I think a lot of people were shocked about this information, but like, she married an alligator tour guide from Louisiana. Like, she doesn't have country roots. Like, she's a New Yorker, but I think like deep down, she kind of wants to just be like a waitress at Waffle House. Have you seen like those videos of her like just behind the counter at like random Waffle Houses throughout the country? Like, I kind of think in her mind, like, that's her alter ego. Like, in another life, she was just living on the bayou and she would have kissed a random guy like Morgan Wallen. And they do follow each other on social media, so it's not completely shocking, but I think a lot of her fans are like, really? You're going to admit that publicly? You're going to say that with your full chest? Interesting. Thank you for that information. All right, people are really loving Jalen Hurts' answer to whether or not he is going to join the rest of his team, the Philadelphia Eagles, to be honored at the White House. Of course, this is a very normal thing to do. Typically, once the Super Bowl team wins, they go get honored at the White House, and the Eagles are going to go, despite but there will be some players that are not going due to quote unquote scheduling conflicts. Now, at the Time 100 gala over the weekend, Jalen Hurts was asked directly by Time whether or not he was going to go. And this is what he said, or rather didn't say.
"Are you planning on visiting the White House next week?"
Got it.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
And then he just walks off.
He said nothing?
He said nothing. He looks direct. He just kind of looks at her and goes, kind of like moves side to side on his feet. You kind of see him look off to the side like he's kind of looking at like a PR person, like, do we say something? And then he just looks at the journalist, and the journalist kind of like moves the mic away and then moves it back. And then she's just like, oh, I guess you're just not answering. And then he walks off.
Smart move. I mean, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't answer that. So it's walk off.
And you're damned if you go, you're damned if you don't.
Yeah. He quarterbacked that very well. as a Cowboys fan, I absolutely hate that man. He appears to be perfect. Another good move.
Yeah, it was a nice move on his behalf. Okay, I feel like I have to preface this next story with the classic thing that all women have to say when they've talked about something too much. Can I be annoying for a second?
Yes, please.
Did you guys see that Travis Kelce unfollowed Ryan Reynolds on Instagram?
Yes, I did.
This is crazy.
I saw it was like every entertainment website. It was the headline. Is it that big a deal?
This is such a big deal.
Really? He's just standing up for his lady. I get it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's big news because Taylor Swift doesn't follow anybody on social media, so people can't dissect this, but everything she does, everybody in her camp, they do things very pointed. Now, to fully understand the scope of this, you have to understand the lore of Ryan Reynolds and his Instagram unfollowing streak.
I feel like we just walked down into Abby's Entertainment Buzz basement, and she opened the door And there's all these pictures of celebs on the wall with like red string, like attaching all of them. And she is about to break down this theory.
I'm like that guy from It's Only Sunny, or it's what the Philadelphia.
It's Always, yeah, Sunny,
it's Always
in
Sunny
Philadelphia.
And he's got like the red tape. He's like, look at this. If you think about this. So Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively, when Taylor Swift and her boyfriend of 6 years, Joe Alwyn, broke up, they all went out to dinner. And there's this iconic photo that all Swifties know of them leaving dinner. And like seconds after that photo was posted, Ryan Reynolds unfollowed Joe Alwyn after that dinner. So we're like, oh, he's trying to tell us that Joe Alwyn did something. So we can maybe assume that Taylor Swift said, hey, like, why don't you do this so the people know that like Joe's in the wrong. So the fact that now Travis Kelce is going out of his way to unfollow Ryan Reynolds, to me, is such a Taylor told move. Like, this isn't something that he was like, yeah, let me unfollow Ryan. Something happened to where he was like, I know entertainment outlets, I know that girl from the Bird Show is going to be talking about this if I unfollow them. So whatever has happened in their friendship camp, it must be friendship ending fodder.
Because I want to be a fly on that wall at either, you know, like Taylor Swift's New York apartment, or, you know, if she's up the East Coast, wherever, or her like LA home, and she and Travis are sitting there. And because I don't think he does this without running it by her, just because of the level of celebrity they are. And they know that this is such tabloid fodder if he does something like this. Like, this is a calculated move. You don't just... He's smarter than that.
That makes sense.
I want to believe he's smarter than that. So there, I want to be that fly on the wall as they're having this conversation about whether or not he unfollows Ryan Reynolds and what led to him deciding to do that.
Couldn't he have just hid the story rather than unfollow? And this wouldn't have been so controversial.
That's why it's such a big deal that he did unfollow.
Yeah.
Like, he could have just been like, well, whatever. Like, we don't want to make this any bigger than the precedent needs to be. So the fact that he is going out of his way to unfollow them says a lot. And a lot of PR experts are saying the fact that he unfollowed on a Monday rather than a Friday says that there's probably more news coming out later this week that's going to make that make a lot more sense. See, now you're interested. For more stories, head to the Bird Show podcast on your favorite listening platform.
The Bird Show.
Is it a genius relationship hack or a way to cheat in a relationship?
So my friend has been dating a guy, and she recently found out that he's been doing something which I think is genius and actually shows that he cares. She thinks it's cheating, but not like cheating on her, like infidelity, cheating at the relationship. Okay, how many of you in this room could walk into a coffee shop? Those who are dating, sorry, Abby, could walk into a coffee shop.
Is that necessary?
See that apologizing for him when it's not even really necessary.
I'm so sorry. If it wasn't clear, Abby's single. Okay.
You could say, hey, Abby, picture what it's going to be like when you eventually get your super hot and rich boyfriend.
When you walk in before Glenn Powell issues a restraining order, could you walk into a coffee shop, though, and order a coffee for your significant other without double checking what they want in it?
Like,
do you know their coffee order?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know their favorite food?
Food-ish.
Yeah. You know, like...
Yeah, it's food.
Yeah.
Well, BuzzFeed.com says Glenn Powell's favorite food is a hamburger with relish, pickles, and onions. So, yeah.
That sounds like something a stalker would know. But, so, my point is... We know all these little things about our significant others. Even if you have to stop and think for a minute, you probably, you know, like, I know Chad doesn't take mustard on his burger. Like, that sort of thing. Well, this guy has a running list of notes. Her favorite flowers, her coffee order, her favorite food, like from what order she gets at what restaurant. And she discovered it recently. And she's like, I feel like you're cheating. You don't have to remember any of this about me because it's all written down and all you have to do is check the notes. Like, that's cheating.
He wrote it down though, right?
Yeah, he wrote it down. But she's like, I know all this stuff about you off the top of my head because I care and I'm paying attention, but you can't be bothered to remember it.
So because he can't memorize things, he has to get punished for it? Right.
That's what her, I'm like, he wrote that. He's even paying attention.
Yes.
He created a note that's all about you. Like, he wants to make sure he gets it right. This is the attention to detail that women love. And you're sitting here complaining about it, but she's like... I just feel like this is a huge red flag, and
no, she is the red flag.
Oh, red flag. I might need to put him on notice because of it.
What?
Wait, what?
That's crazy. Nah. She might have to put him on notice because he has a running note dedicated to her and all the things she loves are specific to her.
How long have they been dating?
Like a few months, like 5 months.
Okay, well, all right.
Oh,
well,
get out of here, girl.
The Crazy Crown comes on in 90 days. Yep. So the first couple of months, you're good to go. And then these things start coming out. And then you realize I'm dating crazy. Oh!
What?
We got a celebrity on the line. Get out of here. All right, so let's reset this here real quick. So I have challenged everybody here on The Burr Show to get the biggest celebrity, quote unquote, to call in over the next couple of weeks. Whoever has the biggest, quote unquote, celebrity, based on your guys' votes at the end of this whole thing, will get a week off paid vacation. Now, the beauty of this is that when a celebrity calls in, we don't have any idea who it is. Hmm. We don't know who's been working on what celebrity. We can't do any research or homework, so we gotta fly by the seat of our pants.
Now, I do have the phone screener equipment right in front of me. And again, like Bert says, there's no name. But I do Google their area codes to see where they're calling from.
That doesn't really tell you much
anymore.
It doesn't.
It's like
LA, New York, Miami. Okay.
All right. So somebody got this celebrity to call in. Good morning, Burt Show. Who is this?
Hi there. My name is Vincent Martella. I play Phineas on the show, Phineas and Ferb.
Get out of here. Damn.
This show raised me. Phineas and Ferb on Disney Channel?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, it's super, super fun. I'm glad to hear that. And I hope all your listeners like watching our show. We have a great time making it.
Oh, my God. My kids are going to freak out. So, my oldest is going to freak out.
I just learned something about Vincent. I had no idea, Abby. Mo.
Yo.
Everybody loves Chris.
Yeah.
Vincent is Greg, Chris's white friend on Everybody Loves Chris.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Same dude.
Yeah, sir.
Yeah, I was on both those shows at the same time for a little while, which is also really weird. Like, I still work on Phineas and Ferb, but there was overlap on those two shows, so it's always weird when people put it together that I was on both of those shows at the same time.
Is it ever weird being out in public and just knowing, like, when you see families with kids, just you have this secret, you're like, I'm probably your favorite cartoon character, and you have no idea. It's like you're Batman in disguise.
Yeah, it's a nice way to, you know, have some notoriety for something that you do because you can put it away. You don't have to be like mega famous all the time. Like some of my work is really popular. I'm not even kidding. In South America, like Everybody Hates Chris, the show he was talking about is really big there. And like, I can't walk down the street in like certain countries.
Really?
And I would never, ever want that in the place that I live. Like it's actually very nice that like Phineas and Ferb is huge here and I'm able to just go about my very business without everybody knowing it. but it's very, very fun to like be able to do Phineas's voice for like children and surprise them and make them happy. It's a cool magic trick to do.
No doubt. What work were you doing before Phineas and Ferb that this would be like, oh my God, was this your huge break or were you doing stuff way before then?
Yeah. I'd worked on numerous things before it. Like even Everybody Hates Chris, the sitcom your colleague was talking about, I started working on that when I was, you know, an early teenager. Okay. I would say Phineas and Ferb is probably the biggest thing. Yeah, probably the biggest thing I've worked on in my career that people would know me from, especially because it's been on for so long and there's been, you know, there's characters who walk around at theme parks and things like that at like Disney World and Disneyland and stuff. So I don't think I've ever worked on anything that gives you Disney ears at the Disney park.
This is so cool because Jackson, who's in studio with us, is also training to become a voice actor. So do you have any advice for somebody who's trying to jump into the voice acting realm? Like what makes a good voice actor?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest part about that is, you know, it's about the acting. It's not necessarily about the voices first. So as long as you are taking care of the fact of taking acting lessons and being a good actor. There's also my colleague, his name is D. Bradley Baker. I always tell everyone this. He's like one of the biggest voice actors in the history of voice acting. He plays Perry the Platypus on Phineas and Ferb like all the clones in like Star Wars. He has a website called iwanttobeavoiceactor.com. And it's like an invaluable resource for all voice actors at like every level because he updates himself and it's free. I'm not like promoting a product here on your guys' show. But he's just such a really amazing, talented voice actor that having him give other actors, you know, kind of information about what he knows about the industry right now is just so valuable. And it is for free. So I always tell people to go check that out.
That's very fun having you on. We love to offer up, like, do you work with a charity or anything like that we can
sort
of promote now?
Yeah. I work with the Special Olympics, and what's great about them is, like, I know you guys are on the East Coast. They have really good programs at a local level, so I encourage everyone to go get involved with Special Olympics in your area if you can. And, yeah, I've worked with them since, I don't know, maybe, like, 2010, like, I've on and off. So they're a fantastic charity, and they help a lot of really good families and a lot of really good kids, and I encourage everyone to do so.
Well, man, we really appreciate you calling in. Vincent Martella, thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, guys. Have a great morning.
All right, you too. Okay, all right. Get a little momentum here.
Yes, sir.
Right, you know what? Thank God he said exactly who he was, because the name itself, I'm racking my brain. I'm like, who? Who?
I had no idea.
Who? I don't know either.
Oh.
All right. Is he Phineas or is he Ferb?
Phineas.
Okay, it's Virgo.
The Burt Show.